This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Borden Chantry by Louis L'Amour. Read for you by Eric Singer. Chapter 1. Dawn came like a ghost to the silent street. A gray, dusty street lined with boardwalks, hitching rails, and several short lengths of water trough. False-fronted buildings alternated with others of brick or stone, some with windows showing goods for sale, some blank and empty. A door slammed. A well pump came to life, complaining in rusty accents. Then a rooster crowed, answered by another from across the town. Into the end of the street rode a lone cowboy on a crowbait horse. He saw the sign of the Bon Ton restaurant and turned toward it. Then his horse shied and he saw the body of a man lying beside the walk. He glanced at it, dismounted, then tied his horse at the rail. He tried the restaurant door and had started to turn away when the sound of footsteps drew him back. The door opened and a pleasant voice said, "Come in. There's coffee. Breakfast ready in a few minutes." "Aye, no hurry." The cowboy straddled a chair, accepting the coffee. "Dead man out in the street."
"Again? Third this week.
You just wait until Saturday. Saturday night's when they let the wolves howl. You stick around." "I've seen it here and yonder. I ain't figuring on it. I'm riding over to Carson and the steam cars." He jerked his head toward the street. "You seen him?"
"No. Don't aim to.
I've seen a dead man. I've seen 24 of them time to time. Ain't nothing about being dead pleases me. Some drunken fight, no doubt. Happens all the time." A woman came along the street, her heels clicking on the boardwalk. She passed the dead man, glanced back, then turned her head away and walked on to the post office. A man crossing the street turned aside, and bending over the dead man, took the head by the hair and turned the face around.
"Him?
Probably had it coming," he said, and walked on. Down the street another door slammed, and somebody sang off-key of the streets of Laredo. Another pump started to squeak. Finally, the woman emerged from the post office, glanced at the body, then went to the door of the marshal's office and rapped vigorously.
"Borden? Borden? Are you in there?"
A tall young man came to the door, slipping a suspender over his shoulder. "What's the matter, Prissy? You out of stamps?"
"There's a dead man lying in the street, Borden Chantry, and it's a disgrace. It... Why, you should be ashamed, and you call yourself a marshal."
"Wasn't even here last night, ma'am. I was clean over on the picket wire. Probably just some drunken shooting."
"No matter what it was, Borden Chantry, you get that body out of the street. What's this town coming to, anyway? Dead bodies lying around, shootings and stabbings every night. You call yourself a marshal."
"No, ma'am, I don't. The city council does. I only figured to be a rancher until that norther came along. Why, I was fixing to be a rich man come spring."
"You and how many others? You get that body up, Borden, or I'll have the committee on you."
Borden Chantry chuckled. "Now, now, Prissy, you wouldn't do that, would you? Why, those old biddies..."
"Hush your mouth, Borden! If they heard you speak of them like that, why..."
She turned around and went back to the post office. A tall, handsome man with sandy hair stopped on the walk across the street.
"What's the matter, Bord? You in trouble?"
"Seems like. There's a body in the street, and our postmistress is reading the riot act over it. You'd think she'd never seen a dead man at her age."
"The less you say about age to her, the better off you'll be, Bord."
He glanced at the body.
"Who is it? Some drunk?"
"Probably. I never did see so many men couldn't handle liquor. They get to drinking that block and tackle whiskey, and right away there's trouble."
"Block and tackle whiskey?"
"Sure." Chantry chuckled at the old joke. "One drink, and you walk a block and tackle anything."
"That breakfast board? You get him off to the barn and come on in. I'll stake you to some ham and eggs."
"All right, Lang. You just hold your horses, I'll get Big Engine. He'll tote them off for me."
Langdon Adams crossed the walk and entered the Bon Ton, seating himself at a table near the window.
It was a small town, but a good town, and he was at home here. It was one place he really wanted to stay, for despite the occasional brawls between cowmen and miners, it was a pleasant enough town. He watched the old Indian back a buckboard up to the hitching rail, and then saw Borden Chantry and the Indian load the dead man into the back. The Indian drove off, and Borden dusted his hands off and came inside. A fat, buxom woman came in from the kitchen.
"Here, you boys start on this. Ed's fixing some more ham and eggs."
"Why, we had a cowboy in here this morning that ate enough for three. I never did see such a man."
Borden Chantry walked through to the kitchen and poured water from a bucket into a washpan and rinsed his hands.
"Who was he?"
Ed turned from the fire, spatula in hand.
"Know him?"
"Never saw him before, Ed. Nice-looking feller, though. He surely doesn't look the part." Borden Chantry walked between the tables to the one near the window. Langdon Adams looked up, smiling.
"Well, how does it feel to be the marshal of a cowtown?"
"Don't care much for it, Lang. I'd rather be ranching. But I will say the city fathers were mighty nice to offer me the job. I was really wiped out."
"You and how many others?"
"I never did see so many big men become small overnight."
"I was lucky. I hadn't many cattle, and they were down yonder in the breaks and out of the wind. I don't think I lost over 3 or 4 head."
"Neither did Blossom. That widow woman makes about as few mistakes as anybody I know. She trimmed her herds down, sold off all her scrub stuff, only kept good, sturdy stock that could last through, and they did."
"She's a fine woman."
Borden glanced at his friend.
"You're really shining up to her."
"Can't say as I blame you. She's a mighty pretty woman, and she's got the best ranch left around here. And if you buy the old Williams place..."
"Well, I haven't bought it yet. I'm not even sure I want it."
"What? If you had that ranch right next to hers and then you two got married, you'd have about 30 sections of the best grazing in the state, all to yourselves." Ed brought the ham and eggs himself, then refilled their cups. He sat down, straddling a chair.
"You catch that horse thief, Borden?"
"Uh-huh. It made him a good run, but I got him. He stole those 2 mares of Hyatt's. He couldn't have done worse. Why, there isn't 2 horses in the state look like them or have their quality. Worst of it was, everybody in this part of the country knows those mares. Hyatt Johnson's talked them up so much, showed them around. Man would have to be a damn fool or a stranger to steal them."
"Well, which was he?"
"A stranger. He surely doesn't talk like any damn fool,"
Chantry commented. "I come up on this camp, just shy of daybreak, and waited until he rolled out of bed and went into the brush. Then I just stepped up and taken his gun belt and rifle and sat there waiting when he come back. He was mighty upset."
"Anybody got away since you've been marshal board?"
Ed asked curiously.
"Nope. But there ain't been but 4 or 5 I had to go after. A man steals something, I try to get him. If a man kills somebody and then cuts and runs, I take in after him and bring him back for a hearing. If a man tried to prosecute every man who has a shooting or a knifing against him, there'd be nobody in town but the preacher and..."
"Preacher!"
Ed scoffed. "You just don't know the preacher. He's had him a few scraps here and there."
"Well, I don't know about that. As long as it's a standoff fight, nobody cares. And I certainly don't feel like trying to bring a man before a judge when the jury will surely turn him loose. Killing a man in a fair fight is about the safest thing you can do around here."
"Want to take a ride down to my place, Borden? Might get some wild turkeys."
"No. No, thanks, Lang. I gotta see to this body. Get him identified and bury him if there's no relatives."
"How many have relatives that show up?"
Lang asked.
1 in 10. If you find out where their family's at, they usually just say to bury him and send them whatever he left, which isn't much after a night or two boozing it up down to Henry's.
"Why bother?
Seems a kind of thankless job to me. Just so as they get a Christian burial, it should be enough.
The town can't afford it."
"Costs only a couple of bucks, Lang. A blanket to bury a man if he hasn't one of his own, and somebody to dig the grave. Comes to that, I've dug 9 graves so far this season, dug them myself."
They ate in silence. After a moment, Langdon Adams asked,
Bored?
Have you thought of going to Hyatt Johnson for a loan? To get started again, I mean. He knows you're a good cattleman, and he just might come up with the money.
You've got to be joking. Money goes into that bank of Hyatt's. It doesn't come out. Anyway, I'll make my own start when I can. I won't be beholden to any man, nor work half of my life to pay no banker.
The door opened and a short, wiry man slouched in, unshaven, the hair under his narrow-brimmed hat uncombed and still showing fragments of straw from the barn where he had slept. He sat down at a table, almost falling into the chair, then crossed his arms and leaned his head on his arms. Ed came in and put a cup of coffee in front of him.
Johnny, here she is. You look like you need it. Drink up.
Johnny lifted his head and stared at the chef.
Thanks, Ed. Been a long time since the old slash 7 days.
It surely has. You want some flapjacks, Johnny? The drunk shook his head.
Stomach wouldn't hold them. Maybe later, Ed. Thanks.
He gulped the last of his coffee and staggered out to the street. Ed looked over at them.
You wouldn't know it now, but that there was the best puncher in the country when I come in here. That was 6 years back. He could ride anything, wore hair, and was a better than fair hand with a rope. But he just can't handle whiskey.
Top hand. Any outfit be glad to have him on the payroll.
Now he couldn't get a job anywheres.
Does he ever pay for the grub you give him? Langdon asked skeptically.
I didn't see any money.
He doesn't need it here, Ed replied shortly. I like Johnny. He lent me a hand time and again when I first hit this country and never mentioned it.
He was in a poker game, sitting around a blanket with some other punchers. I was sort of standing by, flat broke, no eating money, no job. I asked them if any knew where there was work, and they said no, and I said I had to find a job pretty quick, for I was sure enough broke.
Johnny, he just reached over to his stack of money and taken off 2 or 3 bills and handed them to me. There's eating money till you make it, he said. I made out to thank him, and he just waved me off. A couple of days later, he slipped me $3 on the street, and when I got a job, I paid him back.
I know, Borden Chantry said. Johnny was a good man, one of the best.
Langdon Adams pushed back his chair.
If you change your mind, Bord, come on out. We could shoot some turkeys and I'd show you the place.
Maybe. I haven't seen Bess yet. I came in late and rather than wake them up, I slept in the office. If I come in late and wake her up, she doesn't get back to sleep.
Adams went out, and Ed brought a cup of coffee to the table.
Got any idea who that dead man was?
No, Ed. Some drunken cowboy, I guess. They will drink too much and get into arguments with the miners. Some of those Mexicans are tough. And then there's so many drifters coming through. Since the war, there's a lot of footloose men who can't seem to find a place to lie. As long as they shoot each other, nobody much cares, at least so long as it's a fair fight. Nobody likes murder or back-shooting, but there hasn't been one of those around here in years. Not since George Riggin was marshal. He had one. At least I always figured it for murder. Far as that goes, Helen Riggin always figured the marshal was murdered.
I wasn't around when that happened.
Rock fell on him. He was riding some rough country out yonder and was close under a cliff 3 days before they found him.
That dead man. Did you see him around? If it's the same one, he came in here to eat.
Quiet man, Ed scowled.
Borden? That man didn't size up like no trouble hunter. Quiet man, like I say. He sat alone, ate his meal, and left.
Pay for it?
$20 gold piece. I give him change.
Ed pushed back his chair and got up.
I gotta clean up. Dot ain't coming in today, headache or something. Sure is hard to get help. Women folks is always ailing when you need them most.
Borden Chantry walked out on the street. He should go home, let Bess know he was back anyway. She always worried whenever he rode out after outlaws, but so far it had proved less dangerous than handling wild horses or longhorns. He'd go home, but first he'd stop by the old barn and have a look at the dead man. He didn't care for the job,
but it was his to do, and he had to make a show of doing it. He told himself that, yet at the same time he knew he had never done anything just for show. He was no marshal. He'd never figured on being a law officer. But as long as they'd given him the job, he'd do the best he could. It was gloomy in the old barn. The body was laid out on an old work table. The place smelled of moldy hay, and light came in through various cracks in the siding and roof. Big Engine sat down against one wall, a tall old man in a high-crowned, undented black hat with a feather in it, a black shirt and worn blue pants made for a smaller man. Borden Chantry walked across the dirt floors strewn with straw and looked down at the dead man. A handsome man he had been, maybe 30 years old, could be younger or older. Not shabby. Face still, taut, brown from sun and wind. An outdoors man, a rider by the look of him. Certainly no booze fighter. Chantry glanced with interest at the large, roweled, many-pronged spurs. They were silver, with little bells. Nothing like that around here, for they looked southwestern, Mexican, maybe, or Californian. Most of the hands around right now were Wyoming or Montana hands, or from Kansas. Gently, not to disturb the body, he went through the pockets. 3 gold eagles, a handful of change, a red bandana handkerchief. No papers of any kind. Removing the thong from the gun hammer, he drew the man's six-shooter, smelling the barrel. No smell of powder smoke, only gun oil. He checked the cylinder. 5 bullets, fully loaded, as most men let the hammer down on an empty chamber when riding across country. It was safer that way. He did it himself. Well, no gunfight. The gun had not been fired, and the man had not been expecting trouble, as the thong was still in place. His first action would have been to slip that free. There was a bullet hole through the man's shirt near the heart. No blood around it to speak of, but that was often the case. He looked again at the body, frowning a little. Disturbed, he studied it. What was bothering him? The shirt. That was it. The shirt was too large for the man's neck. Of course, a man needing a shirt would buy what he could get. But there was a difference here. This man's clothes fitted to perfection. Finely tooled black boots, the silver spurs polished, the black broadcloth pants fitted perfectly, and so did the fringed buckskin jacket, beautifully tanned to an almost white. This was a man who cared about his appearance, a neat, careful man. So why the too large shirt? Well, there might have been many reasons, and it was time he got back home. He started to slip the gun back into its holster, then glanced at it again. It was a gun that had been much handled. The holster, too, was worn, polished and in good shape, but worn. It was the gun in the holster of a man who knew how to use a gun, and who would have been good with it. Big Engine? What do you think? The Indian stood up. A good man. Strong man. He ride far, I think. No drink. No smell. No bottle. Face strong. Clean. Borden rubbed his jaw thoughtfully, studying the dead man again. Big Engine didn't like it, and neither did he. Something was wrong here. Murder, Big Engine said. This man. No, he would be shot. Sudden, I think. Uneasily, Borden Chantry stared at the dusty floor. Damn it. Was he going to have problems now? Why couldn't the dead man have been the drunken brawler he had expected? Big Engine believed the man had been shot from ambush, or at least shot when he did not expect it. Perhaps by someone he trusted. But in the street? Who? And the man was a stranger. Could someone have followed him? It was a one-street town, one business street, at least, with a few side streets and back streets on which there were residences. His small white house was rented from Hyatt Johnson, a square four-room house with a white picket fence around it, a few feet of lawn, with some flowers carefully cultivated and watered by hand, and behind the house a small red barn and a corral.
Across the lane to the left, there was a considerable pasture where he ran a dozen head of cattle and a few horses. Borden Chantry always kept a half dozen horses, his best riding stock, in the corral at the barn. He went down the lane and through the back gate. He could hear a faint rattle of dishes from the kitchen, so he went up the steps.
"Oh, Borden, you're back."
Bess came to him quickly. Her eyes scanned his face.
"Was it bad? Is everything all right?"
"He's in jail. I recovered the horses."
"Are you all right?"
She held his arms, looking up into his face.
"Sure. It was nothing."
"Sit down. There's coffee, and I'll fix some eggs."
"I'll have the coffee, but I had breakfast with Lang. There's been some shooting down there. A man's been found dead in the street."
"Another one? Oh, Borden, I wish we could move back east. Anywhere. I don't want Tom growing up with all this shooting and killing. All this violence."
It was an old discussion, and he merely shrugged. "You married a rancher, Bess. And when I can get on my feet, I'll go back to ranching. This is my country, and I belong here. As for being marshal, somebody has to do it."
"But why does it have to be you?"
she protested.
"I'm good with a gun, and they know it. More than that, I know when not to use a gun, and they know that, too."
The coffee tasted good, and it was pleasant here in the kitchen. Bess moved about, doing the usual things for breakfast, and he leaned back in his chair, still a little tired from the long, hard ride. The man had taken two horses and had swapped saddles. That was what had fooled Kim Baca. He had good horses, and he stopped only long enough to switch rigging, and so he had overtaken the horse thief before he could get far. Baca had expected no pursuit to catch him. That was half of it, of course, getting there fast and unexpected. "This is no ordinary killing, Bess. Leastwise, it doesn't look it. Nice-looking young man, maybe about my age or a mite older. Somebody shot him when he wasn't expecting it. Laid for him, likely."
"Will you be gone all day?"
"Most of it."
He finished his coffee and went into the bedroom to change his shirt. His mind kept returning to the dead man. Of course, he could simply bury him, and that would be an end to it. But it wouldn't be doing his job. Not doing it right. He'd been hired by the city fathers, and it was his job to keep the peace and punish the evildoer, or hold him for judgment. He frowned. The dead man had eaten at the Bon Ton, had paid for his meal and left. He should have asked whether it was breakfast or dinner, or even supper. Anyway, it would seem, the man had been around town a few hours. Well, what did he have? The victim had left the Bon Ton. The next morning he had been found dead. So where had he been? Not that there were so many places to go. Chantry came out of the bedroom, stuffing his shirt into his pants. Bess turned to him.
"Borden, where did the man come from?"
"We don't know," he said. "That's something to find out."
"And how did he get here?"
He glanced at her, grinning.
"Now, why didn't I think of that?
How did he get here?"
"Pays to have a smart wife."
"It's just common sense, that's all. If he did not come by stage, he had to ride horseback."
He picked up his hat.
"So where's his horse? I'd pin my badge on you if I could find a place to pin it." She pushed him away.
"You go find out how he got here. That will keep you out of mischief."
He closed the gate behind him thoughtfully. There was one stage in and one stage out each day. If the stranger had come by stage, he had arrived sometime around midday, which meant he had been around town, a town with less than 600 people, for several hours. Somebody had to have seen him. Strolling along the dusty street, Chantry reached the boardwalk, paused, and stamped dust from his boots. A girl was walking toward him, a pretty girl with a lively face, big blue eyes, and just a little overdressed and overbangled.
"Lucy Marie?"
She paused, apprehensively. It was partly the badge, he suspected, and partly that he was known to be happily married.
"How's Mary Ann?"
"Ailing. She don't seem to get much better. I wish she could get away from here. She needs a rest."
Tell her I asked about her. Marianne Haley had lived in town for 2 years, occupying a house on a back street with Lucy Marie and a couple of others. Now she was ill. Consumption, probably. A lot of the girls on the line seemed to pick it up. Chantry returned to the barn and looked at the dead man on the table. He would have to be buried soon, yet the weather was cool to cold and they could wait a little while. Yet somehow he was reluctant to commit the man to the earth. Such a man must have a home. He kept himself too well to be just a drifter. The door opened and Dr. Williger came in.
Is that the man?
It is. Look at him, Doc. There's something wrong. That man's mighty well dressed in frontier style. I mean, his clothes fit. He's had them made for him. He's got a gun that's seen use. He's wearing spurs that look like Mexico or California, and most of the riders around here these days are Kansas or Missouri boys with a few drifters from Texas. He's been out in the sun, you can see that. His gun ain't been fired lately, but it's cared for. Seems to me the only thing that don't look right is that shirt. I can't see a man who dresses as careful as him wearing a shirt two sizes too big. Dr. Williger was 45, with 20 years of it in Army service, and there was little he had not seen. I was just sitting here, Doc, wondering how you'd get a shirt off a dead man who's probably started to stiffen up. Let's get the coat off first. He's not as stiff as you'd expect. Here, lend a hand. Lifting the dead man, they worked his arms from the sleeves and got the buckskin coat off. Doc examined it thoughtfully, then handed it to Borden Chantry. He held the coat up. There was a little blood on the back, but very little, considering the wound had been in the front. And there was no bullet hole. "I'll be damned," he said. "Looks like the bullet never got through."
"It did, though," Doc said grimly. "Look here a minute."
With his surgical scissors, he cut the shirt up the back, and they took it off. Doc tilted the body on one side, and they looked at it. Doc's face was grim.
"Shot twice," he said. "The first one in the back at point-blank range. See? The powder burns, and scattered grains of powder penetrated the skin. That shot was supposed to kill him, but it didn't. See here? He was shot a second time. And from the trajectory, the killer was either lying on the floor shooting up, or he was standing up as the supposedly dead man started to rise off the floor. I'd say the latter."
"Only one bullet hole in the shirt," Borden said. "Doc, do you figure whoever it was shot this man, but not wanting it to look like he was shot in the back, he switched shirts, taking off the one the dead man had and substituting another that was too large? He was probably planning on shooting the dead man again, and then the victim started to sit up, and he shot him, killed him, although he would have died from the first shot. Then he put the man's coat on him and dropped the body where it would look like he was killed in a drunken fight." Doc nodded.
"That sounds right, Board. This was deliberate, cold-blooded murder, the way I see it."
"I reckon so. I reckon so.
What are you going to do, Board?"
Chantry shrugged. "Doc, a killing when both men are armed and responsible is one thing. Outright murder's another. I'm never going to quit until we get this man in jail."
"Board, think of what you're facing. We've only a few hundred people in town, but there's over 100 miners and prospectors around and probably 50 or 60 cowboys and drifters. Why, the man who did this is long gone."
"No," Borden Chantry spoke slowly. "I don't think so, Doc. No drifter would have bothered to cover it up like this. He'd just have run. He'd have got him a horse and pulled his stakes. This here is murder, all right, and I'm betting the man who done it is still around."
"Then be careful, Board. Be very careful. When the murderer realizes you suspect somebody local, your number's up. He'll be running scared, Board, and his only way out will be to kill you."
Chapter 2
Borden Chantry, at 24, had been doing a man's work since he was 11. To shirk a job or sidestep a responsibility had never occurred to him, for in the life around, there was no place for such things. A man was judged on how he did his work, not on what he had or where he came from. At 11, he had been riding herd on a bunch of cattle owned by a neighbor who had gone to Texas, and he took his payment in calves. By the time he was 16, he had 32 head wearing his own brand, and had sold about the same number. That was the year he rode to Texas to help bring a herd back to Colorado. He had survived a brush with Comanches near Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos. At 17, he had followed some horses stolen by the Kiowa and stole them back, along with all the mounts the Kiowas themselves had, setting them afoot. Most of the time, it was hard, brutal work, which he never considered either hard or brutal. It was simply his job, and he did it. From the time he was 11 until he was 23, he could not recall a sunrise that did not find him in the saddle, nor a sunset, for that matter. He grew tall and lean. He learned to read sign like an Apache and to use a gun. He was considered a top hand, not the best puncher around, but certainly up there among them. When the town council made him marshal, he was broke, still owning a wide spread of land, but nearly all his cattle were gone, and some of his horses. To keep his family alive meant moving to town and finding work. As marshal, his job was to enforce the law, and to him, the laws were the rules that made civilization work. Without them, there was chaos. They were not a restriction upon his freedom, but the doorway to greater freedom, for they established certain rules that men were not to transgress. In the land in which he had grown up, it was customary to settle disputes with a gun. Consequently, men, unless drunk, were cautious with their language and respectful of one another. Murder was rare, although it did happen. And now he had a murder on his hands. Worst of all, he had no skills that would make easy the solving of such a crime. He was simply a common-sense sort of man who knew only one way. And he started coping with murder as he started anything else, one point at a time. Who was the dead man? Identification was important, for then one might learn who might want him eliminated. Also, what was he doing in town? Where had he come from? Bess had put her finger on his starting point. How did the man get here? The stage office was open when Chantry arrived there, and he pushed the door open. The office was simply a counter across the room that cut off one-third of it. Behind that was a desk, a swivel chair, and some filing cabinets, all much battered, all but the chair stacked with papers. George Blazer, with a green eye shade and sleeve garters, was at the desk. Howdy, Bord. Here you got a dead one. He's dead, all right. Murdered.
Murdered?
George was startled.
Are you sure?
You recall a man coming in on the stage the last couple of days? Tall man, black hair, nice-looking feller, wore a fringed buckskin coat with some Indian beadwork, black broadcloth pants.
No. Nobody like that, Bord. Travel's been light the last few days.
Hyatt was over to Denver, but he got in 3-4 days ago. No, I can surely say no such man come in by stage. Did you see him around?
Oh, sure, 3 or 4 times. He was having a drink down to the corral when I first saw him. He was alone then. I did notice he seemed interested in folks along the street. I mean, he was watching them. Women, mostly.
Well, that's normal. Did he talk to anybody? See him with anybody at all?
Nope, sure didn't. I saw him there at the saloon and walking across the street several times, or up and down the street.
Ever see him riding?
No, come to think of it, I didn't. It was yesterday I saw him around. I'm out front a good deal shifting trunks around or loading mail sacks on the stage or just taking the air. That's how I seen him.
Borden Chantry walked out front and leaned against the awning post. Some drunk might have pot-shot at an innocent stranger, although that was unlikely. But when somebody went to the trouble to murder a man and hide it, well, there had to be a reason. He took off his hat and wiped the sweatband. To think that even now the murderer might be watching him, wondering what he was thinking,
gave him an eerie feeling. He was uneasy, not liking not knowing who his enemy might be. Always before, he had known. Indians, rustlers, horse thieves, they were tangible, and he knew how to cope with them. A murderer who might be watching his every move, ready to try killing him if he got too close. Well, that was something different. He strolled about town, putting the question here and there. Several people remembered the man. Nobody remembered anything in particular about him. If he rode a horse, he left it somewhere. Borden walked into the shadowed livery stable, a wide door at each end. It smelled of fresh hay, fresh manure, and harness leather. He walked down the wide aisle between the stalls, looking at the horses. Lang's big black was there. It rolled its eyes at him as he passed. And there were Hyatt's matched bays, which he drove to a buckboard. Hyatt rode astride from time to time, but preferred the buckboard. There were no strange horses in the barn. As he returned to the front entrance, Ab came from his tack room, which was also his sleeping quarters.
"Something for you, Marshal?"
"Checking the horses. Did a tall man in a fringed buckskin coat come in here?"
"Nope. No strangers this week, except that drummer who was in here from Kansas City. He was selling air oil and such. Some ladies' fixins." "Nope. Nobody."
In a small town, people noticed strangers. In a small western town, they noticed horses. Yet few people seemed to have seen this man, and nobody had seen him with a horse. At least, nobody Chantry had found. It was likely the man had come in before daylight or after dusk. Maybe at supper time, when nobody much was on the street. But if he came in at dusk, he had to stay somewhere. Borden crossed the street to the hotel. The lobby was small, with a desk at one side, an old cracked leather settee, two huge leather chairs, and another chair, made entirely, except for the seat, of longhorn horns. On the walls there were several head of antelope, deer, and buffalo, including at the back of the desk a longhorn steer head with 9-foot horns. Elsie Carter was behind the desk, as she was most of the time.
"Yes, he was in. Asked me if I had a room for the night, and I told him I had. He said he'd be back for it."
"Did he give you his name?"
"No, he didn't. No name. I will say he was a right handsome man, however, right handsome. Had a familiar look, too."
"Familiar? Like somebody around here?"
"No. No, but like somebody I've seen. Been bothering me ever since he was in. He was like, yet not like. I don't know."
"Elsie, you've been around towns like this since you was a kid, and in the hotel business most of the time. You've got a knowing way about folks. What would you say about him? Anything at all? I just got nothing to tie to." She touched a hand to her hair, then leaned a fat elbow on the counter.
"Marshal, I can tell you one thing. That man was somebody. He had the manner, the style. I tell you something else. He was a man who was good with a gun. They got a way about them, Marshal. You got it yourself. You can tell it in a man. No swagger, no show-off, just a sort of assurance, confidence. I don't know, but he had it."
"You think he was gunning for somebody?"
"No. He was looking for somebody, but not that way. I could tell the way he turned when somebody came in, and the way he looked when somebody went down the street. But he had that rawhide thong over his gun hammer, and he never taken it off. Minute he walked in, I spotted him, and I looked at that thong." "You reckon he was a marshal hisself?"
"I don't know, Elsie. I surely don't." Borden walked out on the street. "Hell of a marshal you make," he said half aloud and with disgust. "A man rides into a town, and you can't even find his horse."
Think back. If a man rode into town, what would he be coming for? To buy land? To buy cattle?
Land wasn't moving much these days, and it was the wrong time for cattle buying. Irritably, Chantry stared down the street. He should have taken the advice he got and just buried the man like any victim of a shooting. but he had to open it up, make a big thing of it. It was nigh on to noontime already, and all his questions had led to nothing he hadn't known or guessed. He still did not know who the man was, where he came from, or why he came to town. He started down the street, and suddenly a boy darted from an alleyway.
"Hi, Marshall."
It was Billy McCoy. That kid was everywhere, into everything.
"Hey, Billy."
The boy came back with a retort.
"Yeah, Marshall? You want I should catch a rustler for you?"
"You leave that to me for a couple of years, Billy. What I want to know is, did you see the dead man around town? You know, that..."
"Oh, sure, I seen him. I snuck into the barn over there and looked at it. First dead man I ever seen up close."
"You stay out of there, Billy. That man's not on display. What I mean is, did you see him before, when he was alive?"
"Sure, I saw him. I saw him when he first came into town. It wasn't quite daybreak yet. Pa, he woke me up when he came in, and I got up to get a drink from the well. I seen that man come riding in, riding a mighty fine sorrel horse with three white stockings. Prettiest horse I seen this year, and a good walker, too. Why, that horse could walk as fast as most horses trot."
"Where did he go?
Where did he leave his horse?"
"How should I know? I went back and tried to get to sleep. He was riding right up Main Street when I seen him, but I never seen the horse again. I saw the man 2-3 times. I saw him around town during the day, and I saw him that night when he was drunk."
"Drunk, did you say?"
"Well, he looked it. He come up the street and kind of fell against the building. He shaking his head a couple of times and started on up the street. He was weaving around some, kind of like he was drunk, but he might have been sick, Marshall. He just might have been sick."
"Thanks, Billy," Chantry said, and continued on down the street. Big Engine was waiting at the barn.
"You give me dollar, I dig grave."
"All right, Big Engine, you do that. Dig it deep now." He turned away when a thought came to him.
"Big Engine, this man came into town riding a tall sorrel, 3 white stockings. Did you see it?"
Big Engine got a shovel from a corner of the barn and walked back to the door.
"Tall horse? 17 hands? Could be. Me see him. Go north."
"North?" Borden Chantry paused there and considered. The man had come into town riding a mighty fine horse, yet where was the horse? The man was dead. His horse had to be somewhere around. Chantry glanced left and right. He could see Johnny McCoy, Billy's father, sitting on the end of the boardwalk near the corral. Chantry suddenly realized the one place he had not asked questions about a murder was the most likely place to start, Time Reardon's Corral Saloon. The victim, it had been said, had been drunk. Reardon, a small man with neatly combed hair and sly, careful eyes, stood behind his bar.
"How are you, Marshall? What's on your mind?"
"There's been a murder. Tall man, buckskin coat. Have you seen him?"
"He was in here, had one drink, then left."
"I heard he was drunk."
"Drunk? Him? I doubt it. But if he was, he didn't get it here."
"You said you doubted he was drunk. Why?"
Reardon took a cigar from a box, clipped the end, and lighted it.
"Wasn't the type. I've been in this business a long time, Marshall, and that man was no drinker."
"A drink?
Yes. But drunk? I doubt it."
"Did you know him?"
Reardon hesitated. A moment too long.
No, I did not know him. But I'll tell you 2 things about him, Marshall."
He smiled thinly, no smile in his eyes.
"You know I always like to help the law. I'll tell you 2 things. Whoever he wasn't running from anything, and he wasn't hunting anybody. He was a man I'd lay odds on in a gun battle, and he was carrying money."
"Money?"
"He was careful, Marshall, but I saw it. He had a small sack hung inside his waistband on the left side. It had to be gold."
"He had only one drink?"
"That's all. Paid for it with a quarter. You know my drinks are 2 for a quarter.
Reardon puffed slowly on his cigar.
I called after him, told him he had another coming, and he said to forget it, or give it to somebody who needed it more than he did.
When I asked if you'd seen him before, you hesitated.
Did I? Well, maybe I did. Let me put it this way, Marshall. I had never seen that man before, but once I knew somebody who looked very much like him, and if they are related, let me suggest you find the killer and find him fast.
What's that mean?
It means that if that man should be part of the family I am talking about, you have the killer in jail before they come looking. If you don't, they'll take the town apart, plank by plank, brick by brick.
I don't think we'd let them do it, Chantry said gently. There's some pretty salty boys in this town.
Yes, there are.
Reardon dusted ash from his cigar.
Marshall, people have said some pretty hard things about me, but I don't think you ever heard anybody question my nerve.
That's right, Chantry agreed, honestly. I never did.
Then understand this. I have a business here, a fair-sized investment in the town, but if those boys come looking, I am going to crawl into the nearest hole and pull the hole in after me.
Who are they?
I've said enough, and I pray to the good Lord that I am wrong. But, Marshall, find your killer, and find him quick.
Chantry thanked Reardon and left.
What he needed now was a chance to sit down, to think a little.
Despite himself, Reardon's remarks had worried him. That was all he would need, a bunch of hard-nosed riders coming in looking for a murderer. He'd seen such crowds before, and had seen some of the shootings that resulted. Usually the town won, but men died and property was damaged, and it was not the sort of thing he wanted to happen. At the Bon Ton, he took a pot of coffee and a cup and went to a seat by the window. He sat down, filled his cup, and leaned back in his chair.
All he still had was a tall dead man who had ridden a sorrel horse with 3 white stockings.
A man suspected of being a dangerous man to tackle, a man who did not seem like a drinker yet had been drunk, or apparently so.
At least he had something to start with. If he could just find that horse. 40 years ago this had been Kiowa country, and then the buffalo hunters had come.
There was a good spring here, so some of the hide hunters had camped nearby. And later, some suppliers had come in and opened a trading post for the hunters, building the place out of the board, stiff, iron-hard hides. Within a few months, a stage stop had been added to the trading post and saloon, and the cluster of dugouts and hide shelters. One of the buffalo hunters squatted on a waterhole a few miles south and brought in some cattle. Then some copper ore had been found, and a small mine started working. So the town had come into being. Hyatt Johnson's father had been one of the original buffalo hunters. George Riggin, the old marshal, had been another. The door opened and Lang Adams came in. Seeing Borden, he came around to his table.
Well, how's the crime detection business?
Slow, Borden replied irritably. Have some coffee.
You worry too much, Lang filled his cup. After all, it's only a job.
Yeah, Chantry replied shortly. But it may mean my scalp. It may mean the town.
Lang looked at him sharply.
The town? What does that mean?
Chantry repeated what Reardon had said, and in reply to a question, added, That's all I know. But you and I both know there's some outfits around that are as loyal to one another as some of the Scottish clans. You step on one of their toes and they all holler. Well, it looks like somebody stepped on a toe.
I wouldn't worry about it. It's unlikely anybody will ever know what happened to him, and probably nobody cares.
I care. It happened in my town.
You take it too seriously, Lang said.
Look, the man is dead. More than likely he deserved shooting. I know how you feel, but what are you going to gain?
You won't get paid a dollar more, and if anybody does come looking, just say you don't know anything about it. The man was a stranger. It is likely that if he was murdered, it was by somebody who followed him here, somebody who may have come just for that reason. And when it was done, he simply left.
Maybe. And again, maybe not.
One thing I do know, Lang. If he's still around here, I'm going to find him. And when I find him, he will go to jail. Or hang.
Chapter 3 Borden Chantry was a puzzled man. He wanted very much to do his job right, but he had never been any hand at puzzles. Trails, yes. He could work out a trail, and sometimes that took some doing. Well, why not work this out the same way? The idea gave him confidence. Time Reardon had said the stranger had been carrying a well-filled poke. So where was it? Time had noticed it, and it was likely that others had. Suddenly Borden was aware he had seen nothing of Pugsy Kearns or Frank Hurley, two of Reardon's associates. To say they were thugs was understating the case. George Riggin had both men in jail from time to time, but had been able to prove nothing that would permit keeping them there. If a drunk was robbed in the vicinity, the chances were one or both had a hand in it, and it was likely they had been involved in some stage holdups out of Cheyenne, but there was no evidence. So far they had not been seen on the street this morning, but it was early. With nothing else to do, Chantry strolled back to the barn. Again he looked at the body, and for the first time checked something he had observed on his first sight of the body without having it really register. The dead man's knuckles were lightly skinned. Had he hit somebody? It looked like it. The dead man had solid, well-made hands. No marks on his face. The fight, if there had been a fight, had been a one-sided affair. He unstrapped the dead man's gun, went through his pockets again. Nothing. The buckskin jacket was well-made, Indian-made, and Cheyenne by the style. Now the Cheyenne were a plains people, although they were found sometimes far down into Texas and over against the Rockies in Colorado. The jacket was nicely kept, but was not new, which gave Chantry the feeling this man had lived or traveled in Cheyenne country and probably was friendly with them. Otherwise, to get a jacket like this, he'd have had to trade a pony at least, or a good rifle. The Cheyenne jacket and the spurs. Well, that was a hint. This rider probably had been in the Rocky Mountain country of Colorado or northern New Mexico or both. 2 to 3 days' ride from here. Maybe longer, depending on his horse and his ambition.
Big engine, Chantry suggested.
You make him a coffin, all right?
Blanket good enough.
Big engine was abrupt.
Worms eat him, anyway.
I want a coffin for him. Will you make it or do I hire somebody else?
$1?
All right. Everything with Big Engine was $1. Didn't he know what 25 cents was? Or was he smart enough not to learn?
Reardon had said the dead man had not had more than one drink, and had left immediately. So he had not gambled.
Street by street, Chantry walked the town, checking every stable and corral. No sorrel horse with 3 white stockings, no strange horse of any kind. The last stable he checked was Johnny McCoy's. Billy McCoy was standing in the yard spinning a rope, trying to make a circle he could jump in and out of, but not having much luck.
Howdy, Marshal. You still hunting after that dead man's horse?
Sure am. You recall what brand he wore?
Billy stopped spinning his rope and scowled thoughtfully.
No, sir. I surely don't. Guess I didn't even see it.
Chantry looked at Billy again. A Western man or boy just naturally looks at brands. He always looks at them. Could Billy be lying? And if so, why?
Mind if I look in your barn? I'm checking every one.
Go ahead. There's no horses in there. Ours are in the corral.
The small barn was shadowed and still. There was no horse there, only a few odds and ends of old harness, a few coils of rope, some old, worn-down boots, long unused, and the usual tools. There was some manure at one of the stalls, and Chantry paused, glancing at it again. Johnny McCoy kept his barn clean, or Billy did. About once a week, it was cleaned out and fresh straw was scattered on the dirt floor. There was manure at only one of the makeshift stalls.
But what made Borden Chantry take that second look was the position of it. Either that manure had been dropped by a big horse, or one that had pulled back to the end of its tether before dropping it.
Taking off his hat, Chantry wiped the sweatband. It had become a habit when he was thinking. If what he was doing could be called thinking, he reflected irritably.
Looking carefully around, he checked everything, and everything seemed to be right. Yet the manure worried him.
There might have been a lot of reasons for its position that were perfectly natural,
but it also might have been left by a tall, long-barreled horse, say, one that was 17 hands high.
Opening the door a little wider for more light, he walked back to the stall and studied it. At a rough place in the boards on the right-hand side, he found a few sorrel hares. Yet, it meant nothing. There might have been a dozen sorrel horses in that stall at one time or another.
He started for the door when something caught his eye. Among the several ropes hung from nails, three on one nail in one place, was one. He lifted a couple of grass ropes, and beneath it hung a rawhide riata, and a long one.
He heard a slight movement and turned to see Billy staring at him.
"Billy?" He spoke gently. "Where'd this rope come from?"
"I don't know. One of Pa's, I guess."
"Now, Billy, you know your Pa never used a rawhide rope in his life. I've punched cows with him, and a better puncher never walked, but I never saw him with a rawhide riata."
"Well, I found it."
"Found it where?"
"Yonder."
He indicated a gap in the brush some distance off.
"I figured, well, if nobody come hunting, I'd sort of keep it."
"That's logical, Billy, but that's a mighty fine rope, and somebody would surely miss it. I wish you'd brought it to me first, then if nobody showed up wanting it, it would be yours."
"Sure enough."
He glanced enviously at the rope.
"I never seen one that long."
"That's a Mexican rope, Billy, or one used by the Californios. They use rawhide riatas. I've seen them braiding them. You come by the house some day and I'll show you how it's done." He squatted on his heels. "Billy, I think that riata belonged to the murdered man. Would you have any ideas about that?"
"No, sir, I reckon not."
"That's sorrel, Billy. Was he ever in this barn?"
"No, sir, not that I know of."
Suddenly Billy's eyes became fearful.
You ain't thinking Pa done it?"
"No, Billy, I'm not. I don't have any idea what was done or who did it. Your Pa's a good man, Billy. He has his problems, like we all do, but he's no murderer. He might shoot a man in a stand-up fight, but he'd never back-shoot him." Borden Chantry got to his feet. "Billy, I've got to find that horse. The first thing I have to do is find that horse and get the brand. I've had a hint, Billy, that the man may belong to a very tough outfit, and if they find he has been murdered, they may come shooting. If that happens, a lot of your good friends may get hurt. So I've got to find the killer. Fast."
"Yes, sir. You think that horse was in our barn?"
"I don't know, Billy. When was the last time you were in there? The barn, I mean."
"I don't know. Maybe the day before yesterday. Ain't much call to go in, and I've been exercising Hyatt Johnson's horses. He gives me 50 cents a week to take him out and ride him around so they don't get too frisky for him."
"Then a horse might have been here without you knowing."
"Well, maybe. But who'd put one in there without asking?"
"Nobody I can think of. Billy, where's your Pa?"
"He's inside. He's asleep."
"When he wakes up, you tell him I wish he'd come down to the office. I want to talk to him a little bit." He walked slowly back up the street to the boardwalk, then along the street. Only a few rigs and a half dozen horses were tied along the street.
How could a man ride into such a town, get himself murdered, and then have his horse disappear?
Lang was right. He was wasting his time. He'd be far better off hunting turkeys out at the ranch. At least he'd have something to show for it. Chantry went to his own home and saddled his Appaloosa. He tried to rotate his horses to keep them all in shape, and it was the Appaloosa's turn, although he suspected this would be a short ride.